coming to you from the HagmanReport.com studio, located in the Keystone State, birthplace of a mighty nation. It's your host, Doug Hagman.
Welcome to Hagman. This is the Hagman Report, where truth can't be silenced. And I want to just reiterate that point. Truth can't be silenced indeed. HagmanReportLive.com, HagmanReport.com. Two different websites, two different purposes. HagmanReportLive.com is where you can find all of our news feed, all of our different shows. By the way, check out the Keith Hansen Show, which is hour three of the Hagman Report. Definitely do that. Go to Hagman Report Live, scroll down in the middle, and his second show last night. It's their interviews, Sheriff Richard Mack and others. So HagmanReportLive.com, that's where to go for links, program descriptions, show notes and such, and writings at HagmanReport.com. All right, I want to thank each and every one of you for your support. Thank you so much for being here. Have a packed show for you today. Of course, hour two, Stan Dale. And in this hour, we're going to be addressing the events, a couple of different things, including and especially the events of Richmond, what happened yesterday. I think a clear message was sent to America, not just the people in Richmond, but to America that, look, we're not going to put up with, you don't mess around with our inalienable rights, the rights that have been bestowed upon us by our Creator as defined by our Constitution. You don't want to do that. That's a wrong thing to do. So, as I take some much needed caffeine from my coffee cups, we have coffee cups in our store, HagmanStore.com. By the way, see this cup? So Hagman Coffee's on one side with coffee beans, and on the other side, I need the bean. I need the bean. It's my phrase. I need the bean. So anyway, HagmanStore.com also for coffee. And look, folks, I'm really, really excited about our coffee. It's gotten such great reviews. We have the you know, everyone says this, right? Everyone says this. We've got the best beans and such, but I spent quite a length of time, creating these blends of coffee, because there's all kinds of different coffee beans from all over the, you know, planet. And, you have to select certain beans and for certain, tastes and such. Well, my go-to is the Detective's Choice coffee. And I got to tell you, it's highly caffeinated. It's hyper caffeinated. And I will say that it gives you that necessary boost. So, try that. Long stakeouts, those tough interrogations. You know, I didn't do it. Detective's Choice. And all three of our coffee blends come in ground, whole bean, and K-cups. And you'll notice on the K-cups, they're not fancy, packaged. We decided not to do that. Not the fancy package of the K-cups. Only because, well, you know, it's quite an expense, and we give a significant amount of the proceeds to Russ Dizdar, his team, and Vets for Child Rescue. And that's Craig Sawyer's team. Two teams to fight human trafficking with actual boots on the ground. Not someone sitting on a couch, not someone talking about some non-existent entity, but boots on the ground. All right. A lot of things going on. I folks, take note. One thing I want to mention is there's a virus going around. I'm talking about a human virus, a contagion. I pay very close attention to this. I think earlier today, let me look. I thought Drudge Report had something on it. I'm not 100% certain, but this comes from apparently it originated in China, and I just pay very close attention to what's going on here. And I say that for a number of reasons, because the consequences, how our government wants to, there it was earlier today in red virus. As a virus spreads, anxiety rises in China and overseas. One thing I want to mention is, you know, there's talk and there has been rollouts of these temperature monitors at airports of people coming in from places including China and especially China. Well, the incubation period of this specific virus, this is a, to me, I believe this is a concomitant virus. In other words, I don't believe it is what they're saying it is. There's something about this. There's something that doesn't sit well with me about this virus. And to me, the temperature monitors, to me, that's like a day late and a dollar short. That's window dressing because the incubation period is over 10 days. In some cases, it's said to be over 10 days. So you could be exposed to this virus, which is airborne, or at least that's what I have gleaned from my research. Not be sick, but be contaminated with this virus. Clear the airport screenings, and then suddenly come down and be sick. This has got a significant mortality rate on this particular virus. I'd watch this virus very carefully if I were you. All right, there's that. Then we have a couple of other things. Kind of off the mark here, or kind of not exactly, there are no segues to or out of these stories. The post-millennial report, postmillennial.com, has a story of a Bernie Sanders staffer calling for extreme left-wing violence while living. Of course, this guy lives this non-socialist lifestyle. Project Veritas, this is where it originated, exposed a guy by the name of Martin Weisgerber, if I'm pronouncing that correctly. This is Bernie Sanders supporter number two, a field organizer, who has been recorded calling for extremist left-wing violence and a communist revolution. You've got to see this. We're not going to have, I don't think we'll have time to play it today, the expose on this. Then one more thing. Again, these are different topics here. Biden, the Bidens. There's a new report out that the companies of Biden's brother received some $54 million in taxpayer-funded loans to finance energy projects in Central America. Now, this is not Hunter Biden. This is Biden's brother. What's going on here? Now, Rudy Giuliani tweeted last year about this. One of his tweets said, in my next thread of tweets, I will be sharing some of the evidence I've gathered through or garnered through hundreds of hours of research. Okay, now, the reason I say this, or the reason I bring this up, is the more prescient topic of today. Today began the impeachment hearings in the Senate, the impeachment trial. I shouldn't say hearings, but the trial in the Senate. And it was introduced today with a lot of formal rule making. And if you watch the press conferences of the House managers, specifically Nadler and Schiff, if you watch those, you got a taste, I believe, of the contamination of the deliberate contamination against President Trump. If America is considered the jury pool, then I don't think they could have done a worse or better job in contaminating the jury pool against President Trump. And the media parroted the lies. So, whether it's addressing the rules, how the rules are to be fashioned, the policies and procedures, the procedural workings of the Senate trial. But remember earlier I said, neither the Republicans nor the Democrats want to see any witnesses called. And the reason for that, once you open the door for witnesses, both sides will be implicated, I believe, and especially with respect to the lobbying and the money exchanges in terms of the Ukrainian and the energy sector at large. So watch that, because I'm concerned about that. I don't see this moving forward, but here's what I'll say. I don't see this moving forward the way people think it's going to be moving forward. Now, I'll have more on that in a later broadcast. I don't want to spend too much time, given the fact that today was more or less procedural in nature. And, yeah. All right. Now, Coach Dave Dobmeier and his crew went to Richmond, Virginia, and they had, I'm going to tell you, what a beautiful sight in Richmond. Alex Jones, Owen Schroer. Owen Schroer did a great job, in my view. I just think Owen Schroer did a fantastic job. I don't know whether you saw his speech. Alex Jones did a great job. He was at the Washington D.C. Women's March, and then following that, he was in Richmond. But when you looked at the numbers, the tens of thousands. Look, the press said, what, 22,000? I don't know. I don't believe that. I think it was by orders of magnitude more than that present. And I'll say this one more. I'll say this other thing, too. When you compare that to the third women's march after the inauguration of President Trump, you know, the first women's march after the inauguration of President Trump. But look at the numbers. Look at how that event dwindled in size to really 1/100th of the crowd, this past weekend for the women's march. And look at the behavior of those individuals who attended that march in DC versus the behavior of a very well-armed citizenry in the streets of Richmond, Virginia. They even picked up the trash after themselves. And it was amazing to watch people's heads explode on social networking. I'm telling you, it was just amazing to see how frustrated the left was that nothing happened. And if you look real closely at that picture, I think you can see Coach Dave Dobmeier. I think you might be able to see him. He's waving at the camera. I'm joking about that. Do we have a coach? Oh, okay. Here I am stringing this along. Coach Dave Dobmeier and his crew people were there. And for an after-action report and more, Coach Dave Dobmeier from CoachDaveLive.com. That's CoachDaveLive.com. Folks, if there's any – I'm going to tell you something. CoachDaveLive.com, catch that every morning. Catch his huddle in the morning, okay? CoachDaveLive.com. It begins at 7 o'clock in the morning. You'll be better for it. Plus, support CoachDaveLive.com. Coach, how are you, sir?
Doug, man, thanks a lot for giving me the chance to come on here. And I also didn't get a chance to thank you for your great concern for me and our crew and everybody that was heading down there. And, you know, we have a real this probably scared the left a little bit, but we really are building ourselves a network of communication and a lot of other things like that. And I just want you to know that appreciated the advice that you gave us, and want to talk a little bit about that as we go through today. Doug, it was like being at a football game. I can't explain it any other way. Never one time did I feel uncomfortable. Never one time. We took a group of about 25 or 30 of us from all over the country and showed up, and we tried to meet together and stay together, but it was impossible to do. But it was, Doug, it's guys that you'd run into at your local McDonald's. It's guys that you'd run into at your local high school football game. These are the ones Trump hates. These are the ones that the deep state guys hate. And, you know, we heard a lot of, a lot of pre-planning and concern about, you know, snipers up on the roofs, and people said, be careful, you're walking into a kill zone and they're setting it up and it's all a trap. And I took all that, you know, I don't want to get popped off, you know, I want to live till tomorrow just like everybody else does. Sure. But I sat down and said, you know, to those who would listen, to my wife, said, listen, if we're not going to go to these things because they're dangerous, well, we might as well quit now, right?
Right.
So we have to expect that there's going to be danger. We have to expect that we're going to have to be prepared, and we were prepared and we made precautions, but you could never ever be prepared for everything that could possibly come upon you, Doug. And like I said, there may have been snipers on the roof. I didn't see them. There may have been a kill zone, but I sure didn't come across it. And I thought the message that Americans in general sent by being there, I think they heard it loud and clear. And as you know, Doug, and those of us who have our ears to the trail a little bit stronger than others, I think it was a dry run to find out, number one, would we be able to turn out people? Would people show up? Would they be able to scare us away? Because I think they really, really tried to do that, Doug. I think they really, really tried to keep the numbers down the best they could. And, you know, I saw estimates of 20,000. There were 20,000 people standing where I was.
Yeah, so easy. You know. Yeah. I was speaking with somebody else who was there, who spoke there, and their estimates were upwards of close to 100,000.
Yeah, it was a big crowd. Think about a football game. You know, out here at Ohio State University, they put in about 110,000 people into that stadium. I know what crowds look like. It was a good crowd. But Doug, as I heard you say there in the opener, they picked up the paper when they left. There wasn't trash everywhere. Nothing was trash. Nobody was arguing. There wasn't a whole lot of profanity going on. But I saw something that really made sense to me as I hold that man of armor that you sent to me, Doug, by the way. I saw a lot of guys dressed like this, you know? And I thought, you know, if I wasn't one of us, I'd be afraid of us. I would be afraid of us because we're surrounded with all these folks. People brought their ARs. They brought, you know, there are a lot of guns. There are a lot of weapons. There was a lot of show of force that was there. But those of us who understand guns and weapons, we weren't intimidated by it. But I can see how those snowflakes on the left might be. My goodness, to look down there and see those guys with those weapons. But there were girls with weapons. There were black guys with weapons. There were white guys. There were Hispanics. It was every bit of Americana, and it really, really encouraged me. But I'd like to make a point, Doug, before we really get too much more deeply into this. We are desperate, brother. America is desperate for leadership. We're yes. so desperate for it. And Doug, in particular, Christian leadership. I saw some things happen yesterday that just kind of blew me away. The whole idea, whether we want to admit it or not, the whole idea of patriotism is tied to Christianity. Now, that doesn't mean that every patriot's a Christian or every Christian's a patriot. It doesn't mean that. But those two are interlocked, Doug.
They are.
And what's missing in this whole fight that we're fighting against is there aren't any pastors. There aren't any religious leaders. We got in the van. In our van, we had 12 guys. We had a couple other cars. But we had a pastor with us. Not a sissy, tight-jeaned. We had a man of God that went with us. And why? I can't understand for the life of me why all across America, men at men's groups who understand the importance of what's going on didn't go to their pastor and said, Pastor, can we rent a bus? Can we get some vans? Can we take our guys to go? Because that's, Doug, that's the missing element. And as I look across and do what do they call it, after action report in my own head, we're going to lose if we don't get some leaders. If we don't have some people step up and give good, strong, biblical Christian leadership to this movement, we're not going to win, bud. We're not going to win because as it is, it's a combination of a lot of different groups, a lot of people who love the Lord. Some don't love the Lord. Some don't know where they are. But, you know, hey, Doug, my loyalty, I didn't go because I'm loyal to guns. I went because I'm loyal to what the Constitution stands for, and that God is above all this stuff. And our message was to go and say, guys, we can't turn this thing around without returning to our basic foundation of our belief in Christ. So I just throw that rant out there. Where are the pastors? Come on, dudes. Come on.
Where are the pastors?
Where are they? Yes. Where are they? There should have been busloads. See, instead, I'm sorry. I'm just being me. They're going to load them up in buses and take them to the 47th annual. That means every year.
Thanks for that.
47th annual March for Life. Now, Doug, how many marches does it take, buddy? How many marches? And I saw that. Hi, Davey. My grandson came in here and said,
hey, Dave, how you doing?
There he is, man. He doesn't have his earphones on, so he can't. He just wandered down here in the studio. Doug, how many more marches do we need? I saw yesterday that all of those people that were in that area that we're around, Doug, what if we actually mobilized these guys? What if we had focused on not only guns, but what if we said no to abortion?
Yeah.
And no to transgenderism, and no to transgenders reading in our libraries. What if we have all the power, but we don't have any organization, and we don't have any leadership? And Doug, I just pray that the Lord's going to raise up people going to be able to do that.
Coach, does a lack of leadership come from a general fear? Do you think? I mean, how do we account for that?
Oh, well, there's something wrong if you're not afraid. There's going to be a Super Bowl come up here in a few days, right? I promise you, every one of those football players, they're afraid before they go out there. You're right. They could go out there with one tackle or one block. Some guy loses his whole career as his knee gets blown out, right? He could get a concussion. So we're never going to be able to avoid fear. We have to figure out how we're going to manage this fear. And the greater the fear, the more the need to be able to show up and go do and go fight and to go stand. But I think we're being hindered by two different things as my grandkids are circling in around me here live on the hack. You can come on in.
I love it.
I do too, brother. This is why I go. This is why we drove down to.
That's right.
We got to get into the Alan Hoyle thing. This is why I've been down to North Carolina and Virginia twice in the last week. It's why we go, Doug. And yep. and if we don't stand up and speak up and begin to push back, I think part of it is theological, doctrinal, meaning this. I run into people all the time. They say, well, Coach, it's just what the Bible says is going to happen. Things are just going to get worse and worse and worse. And it's almost a defeatism.
Defeat.
We win in the end. But right now, you know, we're getting our faces kicked in and we don't stand up. We don't fight. And I think that comes. That comes from the pulpit, brother. That comes from the pulpit. And if we don't, after what we saw, see you, Davey, after what we saw happen in Texas with a guy coming into the church and getting popped, if that doesn't wake up pastors, but we're ambivalent on guns, aren't we, Doug? We Christians. We don't know whether we're supposed to kill or not kill. Are we supposed to love them? What are we supposed to do here? We don't know. And it's going to take a deep awakening in the heart of men, Christian men in particular. And I say to guys out there, start becoming a little bit more of a pain in the butt to your pastor. That's what I would say.
It's time
for us to build a fire under these guys. Say, listen, are you going to lead us or not, dude? Are you going to lead? Are you just going to stand in the pulpit and sing about Jesus? Or are you going to do something to awaken us and organize us and go out so we can defend the Christ that we claim to serve?
Boy, I totally agree with you. And to that end, I'm glad to report that if there was a situation like happened in Texas, a gunman would come into the church I attend. I can guarantee you that there would be a similar situation happen. Mm-hmm. Than you saw in Texas. So, you know, not 100, it's not, you know, 100% of pastors are turning a deaf ear, but the majority of them are, or going the easy route. So you're exactly mm-hmm. right on what you're saying. Now, it seemed, okay, so you
well, had, Doug, is it, folks, a government of the people, by the people, and for the people, or not? Is it? We have to ask ourselves this question. Because
yes.
I'm standing out there with who knows how many thousands and thousands of Virginians going to our master, begging him to let us have a right that we have been endowed with, an unalienable right, and we go to our masters and beg them to please, sir, can we keep our guns? Please. What is going on, Doug? And like I said, man, it was a, in my mind, it was a test run to see how we would respond. They saw us turn out. But you know, they're studying the game films, Doug, and trying to see if we're really, really organized and if we really have a plan. Because the truth is today, 60, 70, 80,000 people, they're back to their jobs, they're back at work, and the government still goes on.
That's very true. So I'll tell you this. If I was one of those Democrats, those left, the communists, period, or at least communist sympathizers that sponsored one of the Senate or House bills, and I looked out from the Capitol, and looked out at all of the people, including you and the people with you, that would make me afraid. You know, that would scare the living daylights out of me, because that's a mandate to me. And you know, you look at the counties, the green versus the black on the maps, compliments of the Virginia Citizens Defense League. So I think the message that was sent yesterday with respect to that one narrow, the narrow issue, which most people turned out for with the Second Amendment issue, I think the message was sent. Now, was it received? That's a great question. I don't know. And in terms of leadership and applying the same to other states for the same issue and to other areas for different issues with the same people, you know, boy, I hope. But clearly this was a mandate yesterday by people in Virginia. You know,
but what is it, Doug? What good is a mandate if we don't follow through on it? And what does that look like? What does following through on that mandate look like? I have 7 hours in a car, and I love to talk, so you can probably imagine what those guys sitting in the car with me, the van, thought about, you know. But I laid this out before them, and to anybody that'll listen. We have a very clear, mandated, God-given, unalienable right to keep guns. In fact, they gave it its own amendment.
Yes.
A well-regulated militia being necessary for the security of a free state. Necessary, Doug, not just convenient. Well-regulated militia being necessary for the security of free state, the right of the people to keep and bear arms shall not be infringed. It's listed in it's number 2 on the top 10 list, the right to keep and bear arms. And government does everything they can to keep us from exercising that God-given right. Yet, the right for a woman to kill her baby is nowhere, anywhere in the Constitution. None. None. It's found in the penumbras of the Constitution. And yet what happens? Our government does everything they can to protect something that's not even a written down constitutional right. Do we have things upside down or what? And why is it we can't see and understand the two card money that they're playing on us here? And so if we allow ourselves and our posterity to live in a culture and in a society where all right and wrong, all rights and unrights, all legalities and all illegalities come from our slave masters in the government, we're not a government of the people, by the people, and for the people anymore. That's what it comes down to. We don't know what it looks like to push back. The Declaration of Independence says it's our duty to overthrow such government. Overthrow it. There we are. 50,000 people begging our government to not take away an unalienable right. We've lost our mind, Doug.
Well, and that brings me to this question here, and I think that needs to be answered. There's a show of force, a very polite, very, very, very polite force, overwhelming majority of people saying, don't be doing this. Don't be passing these laws and don't think you're going to get away with it. All right. Now, what happens when, and I say when because I suspect this will happen, when they do pass the laws? And let's talk just primarily about Virginia and about the gun laws. The only recourse at that point, and correct me if I'm wrong, I mean, yesterday was a warning. Here we are. We're very polite. We're armed. And we're telling you that we represent the will of the people. Don't be doing this because it's not our will. it's just a slim number of elite people in a small area that want to impose
right.
their will.
That's right.
So what's the next step? If and assuming they do pass this restrictive legislation, what's going to happen? Do we go back? Is anyone said, hey, coach, you know what? We're going to have to go back, come back next weekend, and it's going to be a little different story when we come back.
Yeah. What you talking about there, Willis?
Yeah. Yeah.
Right? I mean,
God love the 70s.
Basically, Doug, there's no follow through, right? It's a veiled threat.
Yeah.
It's a veiled threat. Will those people come back again? I don't know. What does it look like if we do? What are they forcing us to do?
And
I was amazed to think that yesterday, Doug, around the Capitol, they put a fence.
Yeah.
They put a fence around. What were they afraid of us for? What were they afraid of? Well, they're afraid of something, that's for sure. Made it a gun-free zone. And
yeah. So you're 100% right. So if I'm hearing you correctly, and folks, you know, the coach has been talking about this forever. It's the solution. What are we going to do about it? You know, ever since he wrote the column, I'm looking for some, you know, I'm looking for that somebody else. It's just rung true to me because we're the ones that are going to have to change it, but we're looking for leadership. We're looking for Christian leadership. We're looking for, leadership period. And we're looking for people that are taking this seriously, not only just on the Second Amendment issue, but as well as the abortion issue as well.
Doug, we have a severe. I know you're getting ready for a break here.
No, that's okay. We blew through the break. You got to the top of the hour.
Okay, thanks, buddy. Listen, we have a severe, severe identity crisis in the church. We don't know who we are. We do not know who we are. And because we don't know who we are and we don't know what we're supposed to do and we don't know how we're supposed to act, they tell us in the church that we're aliens. We're just passing through. This is not our home. Yet we live here physically. We live here now. We understand the whole idea of dying and move. We get all that. But Doug, what's the job of a Christian man while he's here on this earth? And have children and grandchildren and neighbors and people that you're concerned about. And you look out, Christian men, and you see that they're now bringing men dressed as women into our libraries and poisoning the minds of our children. What's the response of a Christian man supposed to be, Doug? We have an identity crisis. See, we are in America where most Christians want to go love that guy in that library who is perverting their children's mind. Most Christians think we have to go love that guy, love him into the kingdom, right? Be nice to him. That's where most Christians are, not realizing that that guy is a demon from hell in there to steal the minds of their children. And so as Christians, do we love them? Do we hate them? Do we feed them? Do we kill them? Theoretically, right?
Yeah, right?
You get what I'm saying, right? So we have this horrible identity crisis of who the heck we are. That's what we're fighting about. And I'm going to tell you, most of the guys standing in the pulpit, they don't know either. But I know this, most of them are lovers, they're not fighters. And I say all the time to the folks who listen on our show, you cannot teach what you have not done. If you haven't done it, you can't do it, man.
So when our
35 guys showed up there yesterday, we'd done it before. We never done that one before, but we did it before. We had plans. We had preparations. We understood how the enemy was going to act, and we were going in prepared to do what? To stand up for truth. This isn't hard. The idea that we're going to let the devil and his minions come in and destroy all aspects of truth. Men aren't men. Women aren't women. Men can be women. I mean, just you could go on and on and on and on as we sit passively back and say, oh, well, we win in the end. That's foolishness. It's utter foolishness.
Yeah.
Child trafficking, Doug. They're stealing our kids, molesting our kids, and churches sit back, have nothing to do with it. I must live in a parallel universe. Well, buddy. I can't understand that.
Yeah, and in some cases, religious groups are benefiting or financially benefiting from that. Which, yep. You know, we're looking to expose that angle as well, because there's some enrichment there that shouldn't be. Okay, so let's take the murder of unborn children, whether it's Planned Parenthood, or a
lottery. Is God okay with that, Doug? Is God okay with that? Hey, no. Christians, is God okay with that? Come on. Is that his will? Jeez, go ahead. I'm sorry.
No, you know something, the way I look at it is, if I consider Northam, for example, you know, it stands to reason that this guy would be okay with, he's a pediatric neurosurgeon. So he's okay with taking a baby that survives the murder abortion attempt, putting it aside and letting it die. Mm-hmm. And so here you and I are, okay, I've got, you know, I've got a sworn uphold the duty to protect a life. And I'm thinking to myself, if I knew that a baby was in Planned Parenthood was sitting next to, you know, a mother who just underwent this procedure and they were waiting for this baby to die or assisting, it's murdering, you know, murdering the child. Wouldn't I have the right to duty to go in and to stop that? I'm you know, so hey, what do we do?
You'd throw your body in front of little Joe, wouldn't you?
Of course I would.
Huh?
Yes.
Well, why won't you throw your body in front of your neighbor's little Joe?
Exactly. So what do we, so coach, I'm telling you, CoachDaveLive.com, by the way, CoachDaveLive.com. Do we assemble something like we saw yesterday and go, because you've been, in front of these murderous houses, so, you know, a murder that Planned Parenthood's, is that what we do? I mean, what do we do here, yeah. Coach?
Can I connect another dot with you? Cause when I, you know, when we originally scheduled, this opportunity to be on with you, Doug, we had just gotten back from Charlotte, North Carolina, where our buddy, a gunny sergeant, retired Alan Hoyle.
Yep.
Was facing charges. He'd been arrested at a gay pride parade. Alan had been arrested. And his trial finally came up. It was January 14th, I think it was. And I said, well, what are we going to do here? We got to go down and stand with the gunny. What they did to him was wrong. Alan Hoyle was out in the street. Folks, I'm going to connect the dots. Stay with me a second here. Alan Hoyle, last summer when they had the gay pride parade in Charlotte, North Carolina, Alan was prepared. He went there with his bullhorn. And he had done research on the statutes down in North Carolina that it's against the law to wear a mask in public. But Doug, I don't know if you saw this. Somebody was arrested yesterday in where was that? Richmond, for wearing a mask in public. Did you see that, Doug?
I didn't see that, no.
I'll get that story and I'll share that with you. She was arrested because she had a mask on. They told her to take it off. She wouldn't do it. Told her three times she wouldn't take it off. They arrested her. Only one arrested, as far as I know, yesterday. But anyway, Alan Hoyle was at the homosexual pride parade. That's a heck of a word, isn't it? Homosexual pride. He was at the parade in June, and he had the statute in his hand. You can't wear a mask. He went from police officer to police officer, police officer. Officer, do your job. Make him take his mask off. Of course, Doug, it was a mask that went over the mouth of a dog. You with me, folks?
A dog mask.
A dog mask, right. These people were wearing as they wore their chaps, as their rear ends were exposed, with a leash around the neck, people walking them down the street. Oh, yeah, that's going on in your streets. It's going on in their streets. And there's Alan Hoyle crying out against it. And what do you suppose happened, Doug? Well, sure. They arrested Alan.
On what charge, Coach?
Well, when they arrested him, they said, when he said, this is a great video of it, by the way. When Alan said, well, what am I being arrested for? They said, we'll figure that out later. True.
Wow.
True. Alan's got it all on tape. So anyway, hey, if you could real quick, Eric, the tech, pull up that picture of that gaggle of guys that are standing down there. So we said, we're not going to let the gunny sergeant stand alone. We're going to go down there to Charlotte, North Carolina, and we're going to stand with him. We got out in front of the courthouse there, Doug. Look at us.
There you go.
Look at that crew. That looks dangerous, don't they? And we made a bunch of signs. There is no equal justice. If there is no equal justice, there's no justice. And I did a little bit of, street preaching about, you know, these men are coming out, they're showing their rear ends, walking down our streets. Is that okay with you? When are we going to stand up against it? Yada, yada, yada. So there we are, the motley crew. And what happens? Gunny Sergeant Allen, standing right there in the middle, has to go up into court. We follow him into court. Make no mistake about it, they knew we were in court. Everybody, because we've been out there for an hour holding signs, right? And so we went into the courtroom. They all knew we were in there. And what do you suppose happened, Doug?
Oh, I don't know, Coach. What did happen? Were you?
Well, they dropped the charges.
Oh, wow.
Isn't that something? You say, well, golly, Coach, that's really, really good. Well, I'm going to tell you something. It meant a heck of a lot to Allen. It sure meant a lot to Allen Hoyle,
yep.
Right?
Yep.
Because what they do is they love to operate in darkness.
That's
you,
right.
You have to expose the light. The Bible says have nothing to do with the unfruitful works of darkness, but rather expose them. So we went and exposed them. Here's the dot I'm trying to connect. And who showed up yesterday, you think, Doug, down in Richmond, Virginia, standing on a street corner preaching? Eric, can you click on that one? It says, I don't know. Can you click on that one? Who do you suppose stands, appears down in in Richmond, Virginia, in his gunny outfit, there, preaching?
Hang on. It's coming.
To the people, huh? Now, these two, they're connected, right? They're connected. And so we, if we're in this war, we're in this war together. We have to cover one another's back, and it doesn't take everybody to do it. It just doesn't. So we showed up down there in Charlotte with about, I think we had 13 or 14 people there, and we showed up yesterday with 35 people. And you could say, well, you guys didn't really, you're not the reason why I did it. Well, maybe not.
Oh, I wouldn't dismiss that. I'll tell you, I would not dismiss that. Look, that's 35 people. And I guarantee you, you know, another 1,000 groups like yours having the same number or similar numbers. You know, it's not one person. It's all of us.
Amen.
So, Doug,
we get blown away by because we have got, folks, please hear me. You got to get your eyes off of Washington, D.C. You're just not going to have much impact there, but you can have an impact right where you live. You could get organized, and you could find 10 people who would stop the gay storybook time at your local library. You can do that. You can find two people who would do that.
I guarantee you what you did, because I think back to what you did with Target. One guy, one person making a fuss, causing incredible loss, or deserved loss, for Target's, yeah, for
the $20 billion.
Yeah.
$20 billion, right?
So, okay. So if we did, if we had the same outrage against the people reading in our libraries, in our communities, dancing in chaps on our streets, meaning our hometown streets, the fight is local, is what you're saying.
It is local, brother. It is local. We can push back against this stuff, but it's going to take somebody with a little bit of gumption on the. We'll help organize it, folks. In your local town, if you know it's coming, this is what we do here at Coach Dave Live. This is what we do. We organize and mobilize people to go fight these little battles right where they live. Now, you know, and we got a little bit of attention because we went after Hillary.
Right.
I mean, that was a big one, to go after Hillary, and they say, well, that didn't. That was a waste of time. Was it really? But we went and did it. But we're showing up. We have people showing up now at abortion clinics. We got them showing up at these drag queen hours. Doug, it says in the scriptures that it would be better for you. I'm talking to you Christians in your local communities. All right. Bible says it'd be better for you if they put a millstone around your neck and threw you into the deepest part of the ocean. Then let them teach in your public schools that little boys can be little girls. You cannot let that go on, Christian. You can't let that go on. It'd be better for you that they put a millstone around your neck and threw you in the deepest part of the ocean than to teach you that isn't a little baby inside of a mommy. You better not be doing that kind of stuff. And it'd be better for you that put a millstone around your neck and threw you into the deepest part of the ocean and allow those public schools that you pay for to continue to tell your kids there isn't any God and indoctrinate an atheistic evolution. Say, well, Coach, what are we supposed to do about it? Well, first of all, show up. Show up and complain. Raise some opposition to what's going on. The schools still belong to us, last I checked. The court still belonged to us, last I checked. Government still is of the people, by the people, for the people, the last I checked. Now, we've been negligent. We have not done a good job of being good stewards of what it is that the Lord has given us. So the battle that we're fighting now is trying to unseat those who came in and took over our role. The church has taken their hands off of it. And we have to reestablish ourselves. Eric, I sent you a standalone email called Null and Void. See if you can pull that up there a little. Because we've heard that, haven't we, Doug?
Yes.
We've heard that those words, null and void. That came from Marbury versus Madison, which said that any law repugnant to the Constitution is null and void, meaning it isn't a law. That's not, if they try to pass a law saying that you don't have the right to bear arms, Doug, that's against the Constitution. That law is what? Yeah.
Null and void,
isn't it? Huh? It's null and void. So at what point do we begin to stand up and say, wait a minute, we're law-abiding citizens here, but that isn't the law. And all you got to do is read the Declaration of Independence. I hope some of you are taking notes. I know I'm going fast. And you'll find out that one of the charges that they had against the king was pretended legislation. Pretended legislation. Really? What's that, Coach? Pretended legislation would tell you that they found the right to an abortion in the penumbras of the Constitution. That'd be a pretended legislation. Looks like it, but it didn't really. They fooled you on it. Another pretended legislation would be that they would tell you that a man has a right to marry a man, and that all you can marry whoever you want to, and all marriage is the same and valid. But said, Doug, that's pretended legislation. Well, why is that pretended legislation, Coach? Well, it's simple. Courts don't make law. Courts can't make law.
No.
A court decision isn't law. It's pretended legislation. And so we say people, they're afraid we're going to overturn Roe versus Wade. Is that a law, Doug? Have you ever seen that Roe versus Wade law? I mean, anybody know where we can dig that one up? Oh, they said it was a Supreme Court decision. Correct. Oh, I get it. It's null and void then. Not legislation.
Exactly. By the way, Coach, we're having a little issue with our online system.
That's okay.
I apologize.
I got you. But
you're right.
Thanks, Eric. I understand you're trying, buddy.
No, but you're exactly right. And by the way, just on the Second Amendment alone, that was mentioned within the body of the Constitution, not the Second Amendment, but the right to bear arms. In our right, in that venue, mentioned in Article 1, Section 8, Paragraph, or Clause 15, I believe it is 15 or 16. I don't recall offhand, but it's entrenched in the Constitution, and our founders felt strongly enough to put it in as an amendment as well. There's that. And now what you're saying as well, where there are special rights, based on court decisions. And I love this because I love this about you. The Constitution is silent about that. That does not give courts or anyone else the right to make law except, in the halls of Washington or state houses where laws are made. Right. So
courts can't make law. Doug,
that's right.
Let me pull it up here. I'm sorry. There it is. Thank you, Eric. Right on time. Folks, look at this. Look at this. These are all previous current Supreme Court rulings stating that no law passed by a state can go against the Constitution. Marbury of Madison, I just read that. The Constitution of the United States is the supreme law of the land. Any law that is repugnant to the Constitution is no law at all. All right? Murdoch versus Penn. No state shall convert a liberty into a privilege. Let me say that again, Doug. No state shall convert a liberty into a privilege, license it, and then attach a fee to it.
There it is.
Shuttlesworth versus Birmingham. If the state converts a liberty into a privilege, the citizen can engage in that right with impunity. Are we picking up on this here, folks? These are previous Supreme Court decisions. Miranda versus Arizona, where rights secured by the Constitution are involved, there can be no rulemaking or legislation which would abrogate them. And Norton versus Shelby County says, an unconstitutional act is not law. It confers no rights. It imposes no duties, affords no protection. It creates no office. It is an illegal contemplation as inoperative as though it had never been passed. What is wrong with us? See, what is wrong with us? We let them tell us that it is. But Doug, it comes back to what I said before. Our pastors don't know history. Our pastors don't understand a constitution, constitutional rights, and our pastors don't understand, dare I say it, truth and the importance of truth outside the Bible. There's truth outside the Bible.
Amen.
Can I give you one? A man is a man. He'll never be a woman. That's a truth. And if we are defenders of the truth, then we're going to have to take on some of these issues in the culture and in the society. Because why? Because there's a devil loose. Believe it or not, there's a devil loose.
Yep.
And he's trying to steal everything righteous and true. That's where this battle really does lie, Doug.
Well, okay. So we have the, obviously we have the proof as you showed on the screen. We've got the will, as we saw yesterday. Now we just have to put forth the action, and we also have to incorporate as well. And I truly believe this. A lot of Christians, and you know, one thing I noticed too, there's a lot of, in my view, stinking thinking with the Christian community. Mm-hmm. Like you started off with before. Well, we should love the sin, or love the sinner, hate the sin. I mean, I understand where you're coming from, but at some point you've got to stand up and say, no, the guy in lipstick and whatever drag are not mm-hmm. going to be going into my library and talking and teaching my grandchild. Okay. Well, you're just not going to do that because I'm going to have to stop you. Okay. I'm
sorry. That's right. And it isn't happening, right?
No, right. Or, I mean, bad things are going to happen. I guess that's what, and people might say, well, that's not very Christian-like. Well, yeah, it is. I believe it is. And sadly, too many Christians are saying, well, you know, like you said, we'll just, you know, sing Kumbaya and everything will be good. Okay.
I saw some people when that Texas shooting took place a couple weeks ago and that guy popped that guy with two shots and dropped him right down there. I saw across Facebook Christians bemoaning the fact that violence took place in the church. I mean, I about gagged. Right? I couldn't believe what I was reading, right? Because I said, listen, I've been called to lay down my life. Right, Doug?
Yes.
You lay down your life for little Joe?
Amen.
I'll lay down my life for little Dave, who was just here, right?
And Big Eric and Jackie and all my kids. And,
that's right. That's
and
right.
My wife, absolutely.
So if you want to lay down your life for you, that's one thing, Doug.
That's right.
But little David hadn't consented to have his life taken. He hadn't consented. And so it's my job as a Christian man to do what I can, to love my neighbor as myself and to lay my life. If I don't want to take a gun just to keep me alive, you come to my house and you're coming after my wife, you got to go through me because I'm a Christian man who defends those that I love. Doug, doesn't that make sense to just anybody? Doesn't that make sense?
It should, right?
It should.
The common, sensible, reasonable person, especially if you're a Christian, yeah. But apparently there must be some kind of new Christianity out there.
There must be. And that's where the struggle lies. See, the struggle lies within Christianity, within the church. We don't know who we are. We have a horrible identity crisis.
But see, we can win there too, right? I mean, I follow you every day. CoachDaveLive.com is folks, you need to tune in and please support Coach Dave Live. Go to CoachDaveLive.com and support him because he's boots on the ground. He's out there. He's fighting for you and I when you and I have to work or can't be there. So CoachDaveLive.com, make sure you support him. So yeah, we've got to be the change.
We do. We have to be the wind.
Yep.
And here's what I know, Doug. I know this. And I was saying, again, I was in that van running my chops all the way out and all the way back. Those poor guys, their ears are sore today, I think. Doug, I'm not a novice. I've been doing this since 2003, telling people the British are coming. And not only telling the people the British are coming and trying to train them that the British are coming and trying to get them to stand up. 2003. Doug, that's 17 years. Mm-hmm. I don't know anybody. This, I'm not trying to sound arrogant. Doug, how many people do you know that do what we do? How many do you know that do what we do?
I know one person, and that's you, who you and your crew that do what needs to be done.
Why is that? Why? What is going on? So, you know, I was glad to hear the news that you said that million lesbian march was way, way down, right? They're losing their staying power. If we're smart enough to wake up and look around, we are going to see if we could look inside the enemy's locker room. They know that they know they're losing, Doug. They know they're losing. And if we would just be smart enough to understand that a lot of this cultural war that's going on is for the first time in a long time, that battle is now raging. If our team would just rise up and begin to push back and begin to demand truth and begin to fight back against those forces of darkness that we read about in Psalm 2. Can I take a minute? I sent that to Eric. Eric, if you can get it up, okay. But I want people to understand what this battle is that we're fighting against and what gets me to go out the door every day that I go and why we went to Charlotte, North Carolina and why we went down to Richmond, Virginia and why we're going to go to Bangor, Maine later on this month. Why? Because Psalm 2 says, listen, why do the heathen rage and the people imagine a vain thing? Doug, the kings of this earth set themselves and the rulers take counsel together against the Lord and against his anointed. There's the battle.
There
is the battle. The kings, we call it the swamp. We call it the deep state.
Yes.
The kings of this earth, they are going against the anointed, against the good guys. The bad guys are against the good guys. Wake up, good guys. Psalm 2. Thanks, Eric. There's more. I could go down through it, man. He has empowered us. I wrote a commentary three weeks ago that caused me a lot of trouble. I said, Lord, teach my hands to war and my fingers to fight. It's right out of the Psalms. It's right out of the Psalms. And people thought, there you go, promoting violence. No. Lord, teach my hands to war, my fingers to fight. Help us turn back these forces of darkness that are gobbling up families. And Doug, our finances in this country are shattered. Why? Because there's no truth. There's no standard. Marriages fall apart. Families fall apart. Welfare, money spent. And all of it has to do because we just have forgotten how to live as righteous people in a society together. That's all it is. And the churches are the ones that need to fight to bring that kind of thing back. Instead, our minds are thinking, we're out of here. See ya. Oh, yeah. See ya. Way down. See ya.
It precisely. Coach, I can't believe how quickly this time has gone.
It was so stressed.
This is amazing. Coach, how can we best help you in the remaining minute we've got? How can we best help you?
Just pray for us. Doug, here's what I want. I want a greater platform. I was thinking there yesterday when we were in Charlotte. Where was I? Richmond.
Richmond.
It's in Richmond. I said, Lord, give me 20 minutes on that microphone in front of those 10s and 20s and 30s. Lord, give me 15 minutes up there, Lord. Because, Doug, I know this. The patriots out there, the God-fearing people that are out there, they still have a heart after the Lord.
Amen.
Our Christianity has been so watered down and confused, and people are dropping out of church, and immorality is running rampant. But those are God, for the most part, God-fearing people. They have God written on their arm, you know. They probably don't go to church, but they got God tattooed on their arm. And it matters to them, and patriotism and the American way and all that. And just pray. I just pray for just a greater platform to be able to speak that truth.
A big megaphone, larger platform. And Coach, I'll tell you what, you know, you need to be speaking at these events. In my view, I'm not sure how many people mentioned our Lord and Savior yesterday, how many people mentioned the Bible and God. But we need more of that infused in these, because that's to me, that's working Christianity or Christianity that works. I don't know.
That's how they've secularized us, John.
Yes.
That's right. You can go to church, but stay away from government. No, they're mixed together here, dudes.
That's right.
No, right? No. We're not going to do it. It's only truth that will set us free. And until we return to that, Doug, we're not going to win. So let's keep fighting. I still believe we can.
Amen, brother. All right. Well, I thank you for coming on. I know that you've got to be exhausted, or at least you're energized, obviously, I'm sure physically exhausted. But I want to thank
you. I'll sleep when I'm dead, Doug.
I love that. Yes, I agree. Okay, Coach, we're going to be praying for you. Please come back on, and we are 100% behind you. Folks, I'm going to put Coach's email. Listen to me. Don't go anywhere, Coach. I'm going to put Coach's email in the program description box. Please send Coach an email, letting him know that you heard him on this broadcast, and just give him he doesn't need any kind of praise or anything like that, but certainly give him a word of encouragement and certainly back him in his efforts at CoachDaveLive.com.
Doug, I appreciate it. We do it for the applause of two nail-scarred hands, brother. That's what I appreciate it. God bless you all. I appreciate it. Yes, you could throw $5 away. That all helps. What we do takes money, but the Lord provides
gas
all
money.
Of it.
Gas money, meals.
This is what it is. We're an army. We take our army to the streets, so we're worthy of your support. And Doug, I tell everybody this. If you find somebody else doing what we're doing or doing it better, man, send the money to them.
And yes, but I'll tell you what, I've looked and I haven't found anybody that does exactly what you do in the manner in which you do it. You are very effective. And we need to, folks, we need to work out a game plan to attack the impurities, the injustice here in our own communities and the yuck factor. Help us out. All right. Coach, thank you, my friend.
Bless you, Doug. Thanks for having me on.
All right, brother. That was Coach Dave Dubmeier, CoachDaveLive.com. We are up against, we blew through another break. So how do you like that? Before I get to my next guest, I want to talk to you folks. The holidays are over. It's a brand new year. You know that, right? I know you're still writing 19 on the checks. I know because I've done it. Even on my notepad, I've written 19, but it's a brand new year. The holidays are over. They're behind us. If you're thinking about the high interest credit card rates, the rates of the credit cards used over the holiday season and the bills that have been or will be coming, here's an idea to ease your mind. And listen to me now, because this makes sense. I'm all about saving money. I mean, believe me, my wife is too. And, she's like, yeah, this makes sense. Let's do it. Pay off your credit card balances and save with a credit card consolidation loan from Lightstream. You can roll multiple credit card payments into just one payment at a lower fixed rate. Lightstream's credit card consolidation loans have rates as low. Now listen to this, as 5.95% APR. That's less than 6% APR with auto pay. It's a whole lot lower than the national average interest rate. It's over 20%. I mean, I've seen some incredibly high rates. And you know what? There's no fees to this. No application fees, no origination fees, no transaction fees, no prepayment penalties. The application is so quick and easy, you can apply right from your phone. I'm telling you, it's simple. Now, here's what Lightstream has worked out with the Hagman Report. Just for my listeners, apply now to get a special interest rate discount. The only way to do this. The only way to get this discount is to go to lightstream.com/Hagman. It's so important. Let me spell this out for you. I mean, literally spell this out. It is LIGHTSTREAM. That's lightstream.com/Hagman. And make sure there's two N's on Hagman. This is subject to credit approval. Rates include a 0.50% auto pay discount. Terms and conditions apply. And offers are subject to change without notice. Visit lightstream.com/Hagman for more information. And as I always say, you'll thank me later. I know you will. Man, save a lot of money. We like to save money. All right. So in the wake of the very successful Richmond rally, that was Coach Dave Dobmeier. last hour. Wow. Now, you know things are heading, things are going on, right? There's some shaking, rocking, rattling, and rolling in the middle of the country. Kansas experienced a 5-point earthquake, 5.0 on the Richter scale earthquake. You got volcanoes kind of getting angry. Angry. The earth is angry. And no, it's not Greta Thunberg. No. It's not nothing that she says. No. Here with me, as usual on Tuesday, every Tuesday night, Stan Deo from standeo.com. What a guy. The real Indiana Jones. I know many of you remember listening to him on Art Bell. Oh, you talk about some great days, right? I miss Art Bell. I know Stan Deo misses Art Bell. But some great radio days. What a storyteller. What a great host Art was. But what an incredible, informative man Stan Deo was and is. Here to talk about whatever he wants to talk about is Stan Deo. StanDeo.com. Go there and show images as well. And also bookmark Stan Deo. Why? Because, hey, news headlines. Holly works very hard to put them up and get them out there. Things that you should read. And also Patreon. Support Stan on Patreon. Stan, how you doing, sir?
Oh, I'm doing well. Thank you. Can you hear me?
We can. I can.
Sorry, I didn't know whether I had that connected yet or not. Been trying to solve a little image problem here on my show images page. Boy, there's a lot of stuff happening out there.
Yes.
A lot.
Yes. Which the question I have for you all the time is, where do you want to start? Because it seems like you can go any – I mean, pick a spot, pick a topic.
All right. Well, one thing I want to get out of the way here again is about General Qasem Soleimani, slide 58 on my show images page. What I've done, I've linked this text to a Google search.
Okay.
So that people can go and look for body doubles and how many world leaders, Korea and Europe, England, the United States, how many world leaders have used body doubles? And that's like a person they've taken and trained and groomed, physically to look and act like the real person. You could see all those different links. I couldn't put them all up. There are just too many, but it gives you an idea that the concept of using a body double in the Middle East, particularly in North Korea and various other places, is essential in these times because the attempts on the life of these leaders would be multitudes from their enemies and even from their, domestic enemies. So I'm wondering, did they do this with Qasem Soleimani, the guy in the picture of the general that was killed over in Iraq a few days ago by President Trump's action? Now, I put that up there so you can go and look and start looking, collecting pictures of Qasem Soleimani, particularly headshots, because in 2015 in Aleppo there, he was in the midst of an attack. Both sides were fighting each other, and he went down with a slight head wound, so the rumors were. But then they said, well, he's dead. He hasn't appeared on the internet or news or anything for weeks. But then mysteriously, he reappeared bit by bit, a photo here, a photo there over the next month after that. And so if you get older pictures of him, before 2015, headshots, head pictures, so you can record the key identifiers of him, the scar under the left eye, one next to the right eye, the kind of like a mole up between his eyes, up in his brow, forehead there in the middle there. There are other things that keep for reference in the future should magically Qasem Soleimani reappear alive in Iran. And this is I still think this is a possibility because this guy is just so clever tactically, militarily, strategically, that he could have had a body double made. And that body double may have been who was killed in Iraq, because putting himself over there in Iraq that close to American forces knowing that he was being tracked, he violated one of his own rules. If this was in truth, Soleimani himself there in Iraq, normally he travels in an airplane full of people that are innocents to keep him safe because, you know, world government would shoot down a plane with him on it and all the innocent young people and stuff he had on there on the flight with him. But he was off of the flight and down in the vehicles with his lead generals. I mean, everybody that was anybody there in the military and in part of the Iranian government was in that convoy of cars, two or three of them. Now, I just can't see Soleimani making a mistake like that, you know, putting himself and so many of his leaders at risk. Now, himself, he could have had a body double for him, maybe not body doubles for the rest of his people in the cars. So when or if Soleimani does reappear, I suspect that he will have wounds on his head, probably surgically implanted or otherwise, to make him look like he survived the attack magically somehow. So this is a long shot from Stanley, but it's something that I feel, knowing this character and how he's behaved in the past and how smart he is, he could have done this. So just keep an eye on him. That's just for, you know, later times.
You know, if I can chime in here on something, I don't know whether you saw this. The New York Times, the day of that hypersonic missile attack against Soleimani, the New York Times published this opinion piece hours before the actual attack happened. The headline, the op-ed, was "Hypersonic Missiles Are a Game Changer." And that was by Quincy Institute analyst and former NSC senior director Steve Simon. And it was the exact way that this attack or this, the attack that took out Soleimani occurred was spelled out in the New York Times hours, which was released hours before the attack itself. And the reason I bring this up is because of what you said last week, and I learned about this here probably 5 days ago, 4 days ago. This was published on the 4th of January. So, you know, or the report about the New York Times, that is, by way of Fox News. So, you could be right, which, wow.
That would unify the Arab world, the Muslim world, like crazy.
Yeah.
Even Saudi Arabia, you know, Prince Mohammed bin Salman, who's been at war with Soleimani and Iran because they're a different breed of Islam. They're terrorists. A lot of them are terrorists and they're Shiites. So all of a sudden now then, Mohammed bin Salman says, well, look, maybe he says this to Trump, you know, maybe we ought to kind of, lay back, you know, and not hit Iran too hard right now. Let's make peace. So he's in fear of losing more of his oil fields because he's got a listing of his Aramco shares, $2 trillion worth, going up on the exchange. So from being an avid enemy of Soleimani and Iran, he suddenly is backtracked and trying to make peaceful thing, you make nice there with the Iranians for personal gain, I'm sure, for personal reasons for him and for his country. But you can see how quickly his allegiances shift.
Right.
And he's supposed to be our friend and Israel's friend and everything now. So it's another character, another reason to look at this character and say, watch out. He's a liar. He's a deceiver. And so keep your eye on Mohammed bin Salman, too.
Okay.
Oh, boy. Hey, I guess you have already talked about Dr. Van Impe, Jack Van Impe.
No. Let's discuss that. I was kind of hanging back because I saw what you have on your show images page.
All right. Well, it's on page or slide 60 about his passing, and it links you over to their website. I followed his ministry for years and years, like a lot of people, surely looking at his take on prophecy and scripture and his encouragements to people over various issues in his ministry. And Rexella, his wife, they did the show together, a wonderful couple. And I think his passing, we had him, we had Chuck Missler go not long ago, you know, Stan Monteith. There have been a number of the kind of watchmen are way up on the towers on the wall, you know, with the long view up there. And seeing them all pass now tells me that, or makes me feel anyway, that the tribulation period is at the doorstep. I mean, Billy Graham is gone. All these things have happened the last few years, and it's shaping up to be the time that we expect. And, you know, with the actions in the Middle East, with Iran and I forget which country it is pressuring Trump to go ahead and institute his peace plan in the Middle East. In fact, it may be one of the cabinet members there in the Israeli cabinet, but they want that peace plan to be put in place now because it looks as though the United States has poked a stick at the hornet's nest over there by hitting the Iranian general. The next move could be, as stated by the Iranians now, they're going to retaliate in a strong fashion, a manly fashion, they say, against the United States for this attack. So we're on the verge of a nuclear exchange and some very serious wounds to the United States and other countries in the region. This is a perfect time to cry, let's make peace, you know, not war, and let's have a peace treaty. It may go a bit further before that cry is answered with the release of the Trump peace plan there, but it's got to be soon. I mean, things are about to pop, and it could get a little bit worse, a nuclear exchange or a nuclear attack from the United States or from Iran somewhere. And that would then put the icing on the cake and say, let's have the peace treaty. Let's institute it now to avoid World War III, because that's how it would escalate. So, you know, that's all popped to my mind when I saw that Dr. Van Impe had passed, and what a wonderful ministry he had for so many years. He's a kind man.
It's interesting how the dots are connecting and it's seemingly lining up here, you know, with the end of days, end of the days. And wow. Okay. Yeah. Okay. Wow.
Yeah. Okay. Now, slide 59, just before that one there, is about Dr. Patrick Michaels, who is the director of the Center for Study of Science at the Cato, C-A-T-O Institute. Now, he was on an interview there with Mark Levine, and he was talking about the various reports on global warming and climate change and that kind of stuff. And I forget the term he used. Oh, yeah. He said that the majority of these reports, in fact, not all of them, parameterized various key factors in determining where the world heat would go, you know, and how it would all be terrible. And what he meant by parameterized was this. There are complex mathematical models which have a lot of variables to try to determine where the world's weather is going to go. And, you know, over the next 10, 15, 20 years, climate forecasting. Well, there are certain things there. They based on parameters that were back in the 1990s that they collected. And there were some of them that there's no data for. But you had to have some kind of data to plug the equation. So they would fudge it. And parameterize is another word for fudging a factor, you know, a variable in your equation. And there were numerous of these factor or changes, you know, lies in essence, guesses, in all the models for climate change that they used. Now, if you listen to that interview, you'll see that they've got curves showing the various forecast methods and what is actually happening now. And what is actually happening is lower curve rises than the projected one, which is an angle like that. It's a very, very informative lecture from a man who does know his business. And right underneath that picture 59, the slide 59 is slide 56. And that is a picture of Patrick Michaels, Dr. Michaels. And if you click on that, you can read his whole article, see all the graphs about these variations in actual versus projected by all these other guys. His projections aren't quite as dire. Yeah, there you go. That's the site. I scroll down on that. I'm not sure if the graph is in that article or not.
No.
It's certainly in the video. Down about quarter of the way through, I think it is. Anyway, well worth studying from a scientific point of view, from a scientist. I sat there glued to what he was saying and read the various papers he's written on this, and I think the man is right. Global warming is definitely, as he states in the video, it's not due to human activity and CO2 production by, you know, living things. Because at the turn of 1900s there in the 20th century, the rise in temperature stuff had nothing to do with CO2 levels because we didn't have automobiles and, you know, factories and that kind of stuff producing the CO2. So very good points. And I think it's a very strong argument to use for people that claim that we need to set up a new world order to control the climate and gas emissions from human endeavor. Anyway,
yes. Wow. Okay.
Now, on that that line there, again, 53, slide 53 underneath the 56 slide there, you see a thing that says Australia is getting hotter, and it's showing a plot of the temperatures over, I think it's from 1910 to 2018. And you can see that the temperatures were all kind of cool basically for two-thirds of that graph, and then suddenly, you know, in the last, 15, 20 years, the heat index has gone way up. Now, as Dr. Michael says in his video there with Mark Levin, there has been a global mean, you know, average type temperature rise in the whole planet of 0.9 degrees Celsius. Now, you know, it sounds like a small amount of temperature increase, but this is an average of all the hot, cold, whatever on the planet, and a temperature shift of 2 degrees. Not 0.9, but a shift of 2 degrees centigrade for an average or mean temperature of the planet can mean entering into an ice age versus entering into a blistering heat age. So when it's rising like this, we're at 0.9. If we get up to 2.0, we've got real problems, worse than we've got, you know, now. And with all the fires down in Australia, this is just one example of the drought, the change in the climate, you know, the less water being there for the Australians, and then these fires being ignited. Now, they were helped along, admittedly, by terrorists, some 200 people they've arrested so far, for starting fires in various forests on the East Coast. And it's mainly the East Coast of Australia that's been hit by all these fires. But another sign of global, quote-unquote, warming. Now, I link all that myself, the majority of this, back to behavior of the sun, because you can plot ice ages and you can plot heat ages, if you wish, back through several hundred thousand years on the current timing graph anyway, back to the sun as the causal medium causing all these changes in the global climate. Now, that does produce drought, which is in the forecast in the Book of Revelation by John. You're going to see starvation, famine, this kind of stuff. And heat like that, and also flooding, believe it or not, causes crop damage, crop shortages, and a great number of people on Earth depend on food and water to stay alive. So these are impact factors that we've got to look at.
Wow.
Now, the slide 47 is called coronal mass ejections and their increasing threat moving forward. And if you get over to that article, it addresses the fact that CMEs are getting more frequent, coronal mass ejections, in other words, and superheated flares coming from the sun. With these things happening, we've been in a state here in the low, the low trough of sunspot activity, where we had many days of no sunspots at all. We're now climbing into the next solar cycle, and the actions that I'm seeing and others are that it's already ahead of what you would think it would be for a normal solar cycle as far as CMEs and sunspots appearing. They're a little bit early, and I've stressed this for, you know, a long time. Watch the solar activity. Right now, the sun's north magnetic pole is inverting, is flipping upside down. Now, on the sun, there are two sets of north poles and south poles inside the sun, and sometimes there are three. The two strongest groups are such that the south pole at this time has flipped and come the same polarity as the north pole used to be on the sun. And you can see in the magnetic graphs that I showed last week that the new north pole for the sun is formed about midway between the equator and the north pole of the sun, and will move up there and complete the circuit. So now you have a north at the top and a south at the bottom of the sun. But Earth, and I don't know how many other planets, but Earth has at least two sets of north-south poles in it. And I think that what we see is a kind of a free-floating set of inversions or flips of the south pole, the Earth, and the north pole. So in other words, on our Earth's north pole, there would be a south pole to it down at the equator. And our south pole would have a north pole to it up at the equator inside the planet. That's when it's stable. But NASA's modeling of our temperature and the magnetic fields inside the planet Earth show that there are, at this point in time, three sets of north-south poles floating around and starting to drift from their stable position. The north pole is drifting faster than the south pole. And this, you know, part of what is happening with the ice melt up in Greenland and the Arctic Circle is due to the energy, the heat energy coming up from the core of the planet through the North Pole region up there and melting the ice, getting and heating the water around there. But also, as in slide 52, there are volcanoes on the southwest tip of Antarctica down in the South Pole, which are heating up the ice there and, you know, melting it, causing, you know, a slow sea rise, which could get quicker as time passes. My study is also on gravitational theory and how it works, gravitational mechanics for a planet, does show that the north and south poles of a planet will periodically enlarge or decrease to the point that physically there may be a breach of the crust there going down into the core of the planet or just to the mantle level, which in the case of the North Pole would be releasing the heat energy that's causing the melt. Now, at the South Pole, to see these volcanoes becoming active and melting the ice flow, or the ice on Antarctica, tells me that the plate tectonics, if you want to call it that, the borders between the plates that are home to the various continents, and these things are stressing and starting to let magma come up into these areas that have been typically cold. So that is showing heat trying to escape in Antarctica, and I'm wondering myself if we're not going to see a hot spot like near the Russian Vostok station, I think it is, where it melts right up through there, and we might actually see an opening back into the mantle, like at the North Pole, same thing down the South Pole. This may be part of the prophecies where you have a pit opened up into the Earth and things come flying up out of it to offend, to strike mankind, to annoy mankind. Hmm. Anyway, these are things that are actually happening as far as the movements of the plates and the volcanic action increase all across the planet. But I kind of tend to think that they're starting to fit in with prophecy, you know, revealing prophecy about what they're doing.
Yeah, I would agree with that. It's amazing how things are coming together today. Just as, you know, when we first started doing this, things were lining up. Now they're actually in motion and coming together a lot more than I ever thought, a lot quicker than I thought they would. So you're right. And that's very interesting about Antarctica. Hmm.
Well, I'm sure you've been kind of seeing the notices come across if you put a tag in Google, whatever, volcanoes, yeah, that we've been having some real serious activity increase in strong volcanic action in Indonesia, Philippines, various places around the planet, including what I was talking about there at Antarctica. Now, I'll talk about it in a minute, but there's what's called the Taal, T-A-A-L volcano, and we want to discuss that because it may erupt the next few days into like a super volcano in its area, which we will all feel the results of, and certainly will affect crops by putting up a lot of ash, high ash, in the upper atmosphere, reducing the amount of sunlight that our crops get. And this strange weather that we've had for the last 2 or 3 years is getting worse as far as it's hotter and drier in many places that produce crops, and it's stunting crop growth. You're not getting as much or as big a crop, you know, like the plants themselves are not mature as quick in the normal growing seasons. There are just a lot of things all coming together.
Let me ask you about that, because I'm sure someone's going to say, well, you know, last year my tomatoes, they were huge, and my watermelons were huge. And so how do you respond to people who say, you know, I'm not having any problems?
Well,
I'm not trying to make fun of anyone. I'm just asking. No.
Yeah, I know. I've gotten emails about that question. It's the same thing. And the climate of the planet is not wide, you know, like equal all over the planet. Never has been. You've had like equatorial regions and crop seasons there and semipolar regions, you know, in between the two. But when the magnetic axis of the planet starts to tilt like it is, you know, North Pole is deviating like crazy, 35 miles a year towards Siberia. This is altering the growing bands. And so you will have people that get better crops and people that have no change, and then people that have drastic changes, you know, temperature-wise, rainfall-wise, things like that. So, yeah, if you're in one of the lucky zones where you're getting bumper crops, you know, good on you. Grow a lot more because we're going to need it.
Okay.
And on the magnetic field issue, what slide is it here? Let me just see. That's slide 54, where it talks about violent solar storms are happening closer to Earth than anyone else thought was possible. Now, when they say solar storms, we have a solar wind, you know, particles being ejected from the sun and kind of like a Catherine wheel, like spirals, you know, spinning around like this and spreading solar particles at high speed around the solar system in the, you know, equatorial or ecliptic plane. Now, when our Earth's magnetic field starts to weaken, it allows the trailing magnetic field behind the Earth as it moves in its orbit to stretch. And that stretched magnetic field, occasionally a filament of the magnetic field will break, disconnect, and then it will snap back in what's called a reconnection event and produce a really big thump in the magnetic field of Earth from the backward side of our planet, you know, from how we're moving around the sun, the opposite direction. And it'll warp it back into our whole magnetic field and cause solar storms and aurorae that you can see a picture of there in 2017. And that one's the one you got on the screen. So our field is weakening very rapidly. It's drifting because of the instability of the field. And we are more and more exposed to solar wind events. A burp out there in the sun and the solar wind comes our way. We're not going to be able to defend ourselves or block it off. You know, the magnetic field won't block it off as easily and as completely as it has in the past. It's like in Star Trek. Our shields are weakening. You know, they're down to 20%, mate, and that's it. And it's weakening very rapidly now. So we're going to see surprises like this auroral display, and it creates something like in the areas where it's affected on the planet, like a miniature EMP strike on that area of the planet. It's like a rubber band snapping back and releasing all this magnetic energy, which produces a miniature localized EMP event or several of them at the same time. Just another thing to put in your holy cow bucket, you know.
Yeah. and everything we've talked about, these are all interconnecting, interwoven, even force multiplying events, aren't they? I mean, it's everything's connected.
Yeah.
Yeah.
With the weather changes, like with rainfall after a lot of drought, East Africa, you know, particularly Ethiopia, but surrounding areas there, are developing locust swarms. Look at slide 44. There are two links there. There's the first one, which goes to the article where you see the picture of that locust this guy's hand, got in his hand. But then the second link after the word also, it's video actually showing the locust swarms with people in it. And that is scary. Click on that link if you want just to show the video. I think it comes up with the website. Yeah, well, maybe it's just a still there. I thought we had a video on that one, but look at those people trapped in all those locusts. There you go. Yeah, that's it.
Huh.
Spooky stuff.
Locusts don't bite, do they, or sting, or I'm sorry, whatever.
No, actually, they taste pretty good if you roast them, apparently. But no, they go after the green things. They'll get green. I've heard reports in the past where a locust swarm would eat green colored clothing on a hangout in a line to dry, you know,
really?
And they would eat that. Yeah. They're just kind of, oh, that's green. I'll eat it. You know, they're crazy like that, but, they're color driven.
Okay. But those, again, biblical, isn't this is kind of biblical to me.
Oh, it is. It is. Look, the plagues of Moses, you know, in the Exodus, you know, before Egypt let him go, a lot of those plagues are going to be replayed in the end times. And, you know, hail and, you know, maybe even the sky going dark with ash from a volcano or two blowing up at really super volcanoes. There's just a lot of things that I think that happened in Moses' time in Egypt that will rehappen again in the revelation, the period of the tribulation period.
Okay.
Anyway, yep. That's all right. Let me just get back over there. United States is doing some tests, the Navy, with jamming GPS signals. Now, the reason I bring this up is out here where we live here in Colorado and Pueblo and that area around an Army base, Fort Carson, and around some naval research centers and things like that, and Air Force, and it's Air Force Base. We've been having odd behavior in our handheld communication devices, you know, like walkie-talkies. People in stores have been telling us about it, and computers have suddenly turned off and on. It certainly happened in our office, just some weird stuff where you didn't turn it on, it turns itself on. And we've had one incidence of this like 5 years ago, I think it was, here in our house, where our garage doors started opening and closing all by themselves, which was interesting.
Yeah.
And it was apparently some high-frequency testing being done at Fort Carson or somewhere around NORAD, right next to Fort Carson, just north of us. Now, what they're warning against in slide 45 is they're saying, look, guys, we're going to be doing some testing, and it's going to interfere with aircraft and vehicles that are using GPS, you know, in Florida and up the coast a bit. So during these times, it'll be short periods of time, a few hours at a time. When you see this happening, just don't depend on your GPS and wait a couple hours and it'll go back to normal. So they're screwing with GPS signals. Now, GPS are broadcast from satellites down across the planet for you to pick up a certain frequency. That's what I'm kind of trying to figure out is, okay, why are they messing with that? Is it some sort of a method to locally screw up the GPS coordinates over an army that you're fighting on the ground or in the air, where you can hit them and not yourself, so that their guided missiles and stuff can't hit you? Now, if that's the case, then something like this could be expanded over the whole United States, and missiles coming this way could be confused and caused to crash before they do their job. So I know they've been working on this for a couple of years, something like this, that on an installation they put up in I think it was Bulgaria, I think. But anyway, we talked about it in the show a few years back. But this is a localized test, which I suspect means it's a tactical device as well as a strategic one if they build it to cover the whole United States, just to periodically block all incoming craft and, you know, aircraft and missiles and troops, for that matter, so they can't guide themselves electronically. They have to do it the old-fashioned way. And with missiles and aircraft, old-fashioned way doesn't work. You don't grab a map in the cockpit and say, this is the way I'm going to go anymore. You trust your instruments. So it can be a good thing, and certainly can be a nuisance when they're testing it around your house.
Yeah.
Yes.
Does that affect anything beyond GPS? For example, communications? Would that accept or impact communications adversely?
It could. As I recall in the article, let me just see here.
I've had a lot of people, more people than normal, send me communications saying, you know, my cell phone is acting weird. It's not working. I certainly can't get a internet signal using Wi-Fi for intermittent periods. And they, a couple have sent me the map, you know, that was up on the screen. So just curious as to.
Well, if you look at that article, there's a map there at the top showing the various frequency ranges, like 352 nanometers and 241 nanometers. Those are frequencies, you know, wavelengths. Mm. So yes, it can affect it. Are they going to be doing it in the range of cell towers? If they're going to block a GPS, then the answer is probably yes, because cell towers are relaying information to you from the GPS satellite to your cell phone.
True.
So things can get a bit busy out there when we're having – sorry, that's nautical miles, not frequency, 352 nautical miles difference. But the frequencies they're using are satellite frequencies that normally broadcast this stuff down to our cell towers and to our computers and things like that. And certainly this could affect the internet and portions of it getting information, you know, from these satellites.
Okay.
Yeah. At least if they're going to open and close our garage doors like that, they might do it in rhythm. So you could dance a jig with it or something, you know. But no, it's.
I can just envision that. Your garage door opening like 2 a.m, you hear it, and you think, well, I want to go to Holly. Can you check that out? No, Stan, you check it out. No, Holly, come on. That'd be the way.
As my grandfather, the sheriff, used to say, well, boy, just grab your hog leg and go out there and take care of business. Yeah, he was cool, Grandpa Tobe. There is another slide there. Where is that? That slide 43. Now, there's been a ruin stone, you know, that they haven't been able to decode for like 1,200 years. It's a Viking, what they call a rock stone. I'd call it a ruin stone, but it's got inscriptions on it. And this stone, they have managed to decode it now, and you can see the pictures of it as you roll down the page there. See that old style of writing. Mm-hmm. And there it alludes to a repeat of a little ice age. Now, I don't know how they would have known this. How did the Middle Americans, you know, with their solar charts and solar things, you know, like tracking time, how did they know all that in advance? But apparently they did, and maybe the Vikings had some way of telling it too. But for them to predict a little ice age, and I see something happening here where the temperature of the planet is increasing, but yet there are areas where it's decreasing. As I told you about localized effects of these magnetic field drifts. So on this stone, it's saying, you know, we're going to have a repeat of the little ice age they had back then. I know that changes in the sun can do this periodically, you know, dimming, and that might be what's going to happen here shortly. But it's just interesting that, you know, with the Aztecs and the Mayans, all the data they had about the weather and about the nature of the earth and how cycles repeat and, you know, disasters repeat. And then we find this stone there. Yeah. Anyway.
So that's 1,200 years old, roughly. Right.
Yeah.
So how would they know?
I don't know. It's in Sweden.
Yeah.
Where they found this. Obviously, you had Vikings in that area. Oh, by the way, Holly and I had Christmas presents to each other of getting our DNA checked out for, you know, what our relatives were back several generations.
Right.
And we both come from primarily from, like Viking or Swedish or German, or, you know, European, Norwegian stock. Hmm. And she said, well, where's the Jewish part? I said, well, the Jewish part is what you're looking at. I said, the migrations of two tribes, you know, Ephraim and Manasseh, went to Great Britain and the United States, but they were also in Europe, spread all through there. And so you don't know what portion of your blood is Jewish, but I said, actually not Jewish, but Hebrew. Jewish means Judah and Benjamin, but Hebrew covers all the 13 tribes.
Wow. So I'm not going to invite you on my boat. Would I get one? take over. No, very interesting. So you're both from, it would be Nordic countries, I guess.
Yeah, well, saying? I have 0.9% of Southwest Africa. Oh, boy. I said it.
There you go. Now it's a party. Hey,
yeah, well, that's, you know, African genes, they tell you that there's a small link to the beginning of man, the origins of man over in that area. This a little bit south of the Garden of Eden, but
well,
that's an it. Yeah.
I mean, it makes sense, wouldn't it? Doesn't that kind of substantiate your location of the Garden of Eden in a large way?
Oh, yeah, it does. And, you know, DNA migration patterns that they've performed checking the mitochondria of women, they found what they call the mitochondrial Eve, where all the bloodlines of the world focus into a spot in Northeast Africa, excuse me, called the Omo Valley. And that's where all genetic patterns on the planet now in humans originate, is that one spot, which is about maybe 100 miles from where the Garden of Eden is. Down, if you went down from the Garden of Eden and went down the waterfall in the Great East African Rift down into, you know, Ethiopia and down to the Danakil Plains. Anyway, that's where the scientific proof shows that the DNA of all mankind came from it originally, which is kind of cool. But I had a guy write me a thing telling me, you know, you're wrong about where the Garden of Eden was, because if you follow the Bible, it says, and he planted a garden in Eden to the east. Oh, so that meant, they said, that it was to India, where the Garden of Eden had to be in India. And of course, it's how you interpret the Hebrew, which says, in Eden to the east. And that's why we have the terms, you know, in various, movies and books, east of Eden. It's Eden was, a whole large area around, Lake Victoria. And on the right side of it is where the garden was, on the eastern side of it. If you correct the axis of the planet back up to true from 23.4 degrees deviation, you know, our orbit's tilting that much. If you straighten up the planet, then in the east of the land of Lake Victoria around there is where the Garden of Eden was. So in Eden to the east. So it sounds like it's in your in Eden and to the east of Eden being inside the country or the land of Eden, not over into India, because they don't have the same axis, you know, the north-south axis. It's all 23.4 degrees. Anyway, just, you know, I keep getting these people telling me, you're so wrong. The Garden of Eden couldn't be there. And I do try to address their arguments and see what they're saying. And so far, I haven't bought any of the locations that they say, because they don't go to any detail about all the rest of the pointers in the Bible to where the Garden of Eden was and is. Anyhow,
if you don't mind a minor digression here, how many others lay claim to having found or substantiating the location of the Garden of Eden besides yourself? I mean, a significant number of people, or
Oh yeah. The Chinese have one in their version up around the North Pole, I think. The Mormons in the United States put it up near Wisconsin or somewhere in that area that was originally Garden of Eden. And there are people that place it down where the South Pole is for some reason. I don't know why, but there are so many of them that I'm not really surprised, or shouldn't be. When I told the media I found the actual location of Garden of Eden, they kind of went, yeah, okay, you too? Well, good, thank you. But, yeah. You know, I'm so positive in my mind. You know, I've reconstructed the Earth, put the continents back where they were at the time before the Great Flood, when the asteroid fractured the planet, the crust of the planet. I've done all the homework, and it fits so many things together. Even the legendary Atlantis and Lemuria, all that kind of stuff, all happened in that area. Kind of, if you pick the middle of the Indian Ocean and look to the left, there's the Garden of Eden, and if you look to the kind of 45 degrees, you know, between west and north, there's Atlantis. And if you look on the other side, 90 degrees from that point, you have where all the little islands that formed the landmass that broke up, and it was Lemuria. All those things all happened in that area. You know, so I'm happy with it, and people can argue all they want. When they can prove, disprove all my arguments, then I'll listen.
There you go. Yeah. I like your research. And by the way, folks, Patreon, Stan Dale's Patreon. There's the link right off of his website. Always good information there as well. So, okay.
Yeah, you can join that. As I understand it, you can correct me if I'm wrong, but when I put a link up on that Patreon site, like when I put a posting there and say, here's the address of a video I've just made, say, on the Garden of Eden, does that stay there all the time and people can join and then and go through the past notes or things and see that same link?
Boy, I hope so. That's what I've done.
Okay.
Yeah.
Okay. Well, then in that case, if you're interested in my presentation, the lecture I gave on the Garden of Eden and why I located it where it is, you can join my Patreon channel there. It's Stan Holly Deo. And you'll see that my argument's there, and I've added a few things to that video, to that lecture, to make it clearer, you know, to augment what I did when I originally produced the video. So there's that, and then there's a lecture that I gave on Atlantis, which is freebies on my YouTube channel. Both of those things are quite worth the view, I think, to solve a lot of the mysteries that people have pondered, great mysteries, you know, and that's just kind of what Holly and I like to do, is research these ancient mysteries and solve them. So I think we have.
All right.
Let me get back over to the Taal volcano.
Oh, yes.
I'm just trying to see if I've got a link that's pictures. Maybe I didn't link the article. Right. Right. Doesn't look like it did. Okay. These pictures here are of a volcano. I think that's Philippines, isn't it?
I believe so.
Yeah.
Yeah,
it is. It's on the Philippines. I see that there, right close to where Pinatubo was. That's in slide 51. You can see that. However, these photographs here are quite striking. They were from, say, 46, slide 46 to 48. If you look at 46, which you've got up on the screen, I was staring at that, and imagine the force of this explosion shooting straight up. And it's not like curving off to the side early. It's like a rocket of ash and fire coming up out of this thing. And this is preliminary. They suspect in the next few days this could be a full-blown water, phreatic-type explosion and, do great damage. Looking at that photo, I kind of thought, oh, here's something I can put out there to start a rumor mill. Up at the top of that cloud, you see these kind of white streaks that look like arms and a head. It could be a demon or something in the cloud things. But anyway, the real thing is the focus of this, like it's from a deep tube, and it's making such a focused beam of emissions of the gases and ash and chunks and stuff. The next picture, 47, is just one of many in videos you can see on the articles on the Taal volcano, where lightning is connects the cloud, the volcanic cloud, to the sky somewhere. It's like a cloud-to-cloud lightning flash. It builds up so much friction and charge on it, like a Van de Graaff generator, that you get these lightning strikes. And the video, of course, and some of the stills, like in slide 48, right next to it, show time exposures, these lightning discharges, some to Earth, some to the sky. I mean, that's impressive. That's just, I can't get over that. Being, a high voltage Tesla freak, I love these kind of shots. Isn't that just magnificent?
Wow.
Yeah.
All right. You mentioned that this could affect our growing climate and such if this blows big. Is that what you said or not?
Yeah.
Okay.
It's not as bad as, say, the Lake Taupo crater explosion in, 238 AD or something like that, because that produced 3 days of total darkness, and it affected growing climates for years, centuries. Until the stuff settles out of the atmosphere, it becomes like a reflector and absorber at the same time of sunlight and infrared, which doesn't let it get to the ground in the quantities it should normally. Now, in slide 49, I was analyzing this volcano. Why was it so, violent? And in slide 49, you see where the volcano is, but it's on the junction of two fault lines. Those red lines coming through there, right in the middle is where two fault lines join. Now, there was water in this from a past eruption. There's water. You can see that kind of light blue color right around the junction there is water. It was a lake, and it filled after the last time this thing erupted. If you look at slide 50, you'll see the before and after this last explosion. On the left is water in the volcanic crater cone. To the right is after the eruption, should it stop. This is where the lake used to be, but it will have all been blown out. Now, I suspect what has happened here, because it's on a fault line join, is that the Earth crust underneath the Taal volcano there had begun to separate or fracture. Normally what they do is they separate and drop down a little bit, causing, if there's any water above it, the water to flow down into the hot magma pool. And depending upon how much and how quickly that happens, it forms a steam explosion, which can be absolutely incredible. And that starts the whole eruption process, and it brings the magma up, and you have this great cloud of stuff coming out of it. Why is this interesting? Well, New Zealand sits on two fault lines, moving one way and moving the other way, two directions of movement underneath North Island, New Zealand, and the Taupo caldera. Now, the water on top of the caldera there is Lake Taupo, great for fishing, trout fishing and stuff like that. When Holly and I were down there, I talked with the GNS, you know, like our USGS people, and they said they prefer to have as much water in that lake as they can to hold the lid on the volcanic pressures underneath it. So they worry about the lake level dropping because the heavy water lid is starting to release the pressure on that dome that's formed under the water, and it will allow it to explode and become a super volcano, a really, really, really bad one, like Yellowstone. Now, the dream vision I had years ago, before I'd even known about New Zealand's Lake Taupo and that kind of stuff, I showed in the dream, I saw a bunch of people wearing different kinds of clothes, military, civilian, that kind of stuff, old, young, going down inside Lake Taupo, not knowing what was happening. I couldn't reach them and talk to them, say, look, you're going down into a danger zone here, and they were on the water there. And I read yesterday a paper that said, look, Lake Taupo, when it the pressure above starts to push down on the cone and the cone starts to weaken, what happens is the sticky magma underneath it coming up will suck down at the same time the weight of the lake is on it. And when the two combine, it will break that solid floor of Lake Taupo and release all that water, and that's a huge amount, down into a magma pool, which you can just see in your mind will suddenly just blow the heck out of North Island. And that's what I saw, is it sucked it down rather than going up. First, it had to go down and then blow up like that. So I'm wondering, if the Taal volcanic situation here isn't kind of a warning or, a thing to watch, because the same kind of thing can happen on Lake Taupo, which would be catastrophic for New Zealand and for the world for some time to come.
Are we set to have multiple volcanoes erupt? Is that a possibility? Like in different areas?
Oh yeah. I mean, look primarily at plate tectonic borders and known fault lines that connect to plate tectonics. The tectonic plates. Another dream vision I had was years ago up in the air over the west coast of the United States, and I was kind of over Washington State area in the air looking down and then kind of to the south toward Mexico, and I saw, I think it was 7, maybe 8 volcanoes at once, all erupting. And we've got a volcano there. We've got Popocatépetl, which has been acting up in Mexico. That was the end volcano. And then we've got Mount St. Helens, and we've got the whole cascade of subduction zone where, magma is going to be released. And I saw that in a dream vision. And believe me, the dream vision I had for Lake Taupo and that eruption, I had never been there or heard of it or seen anything about it. I even saw the name of a motel sitting right on the edge of Lake Taupo that would be a signal for the heat increase just before the eruption. I went over with Holly later to do a lecture in New Zealand, in Auckland. And so we drove down there to see if there was a hotel like that. And there was. And it was the same name and same place. And inside of it, I was shown the floor plan and where people would be sitting to avoid the rising hot water. So I know that my dream visions, they're different than a dream or, that kind of stuff. They are accurate. These kind of things, I know when they're accurate. And the other one showing volcanoes all down the west coast of the United States, take it. That's going to be accurate. It even showed me ash falls with steam and water in them, blocking all the roads from the west coast going east into Utah and even to Colorado, but places that people wanted to get to for safety when things started to break up over there. They couldn't because the cars were sliding off the slippery roads cut through the mountains. So a lot of detail was given to me in that dream vision. So, yes, there are going to be volcanoes, in my opinion, in many places across the planet where we hadn't seen them in a long time or ever. Because the planet's crust is expanding and cracking and allowing the magma, which is trying to get loose, to just suddenly release and erupt up like that. Some will be flows that will just flow over the crack and down and form lava blankets, in the terrain. Others will have violent or catastrophic eruptions.
Goodness. And in the last couple of minutes we've got, then there was that earthquake in Kansas.
4.6, wasn't it? Yeah. Something like that.
Something. They, in fact, they changed the magnitude, but yes.
Yeah. earthquakes in diverse places. I guess that means in places that aren't, they don't normally happen. Certainly you don't think of Kansas as that. You think of Kansas and the Wizard of Oz and tornadoes, but not earthquakes.
Yeah. Surprised me, I'll tell you.
Yeah. Well, just keep watching our homepage there, standale.com. We put up the news there. Holly does majority of that page. I sometimes contribute 2 or 3% of the stuff, but that's where anything that's happening that we're concerned about gets put up. And right now, volcanoes are of interest.
Yeah, good place on the internet to have a bookmark. That's standale.com. And I know Holly puts a lot of work into that, as you do. So.
Yeah.
All right.
Well, she's up at 4:30, 4:30, 6 days a week. And by about 10 the next morning, she's got it all linked up and posted and whatever. So she's a trooper.
It's a big commitment, and you guys handle it well. Well, thank you, Stan. We're out of time.
Yes. Well, next week we'll pick up and see what's happened in the last 7 days.
Exactly. See if there are any more earthquakes in the continental United States or whatever. So, right. Or volcanoes.
Bye.
All right. Thank you.
Bye-bye.
Folks, that'll do it for me tonight and Eric the Tech. Eric the Tech, you doing all right, bro?
Yep, doing good.
All right. Yeah. He's the man. Don't forget, folks, HagmanStore.com. HagmanStore.com. Coffee. Coffee mugs. They go together. HagmanStore.com. Have a good night, everyone. Don't forget, Keith Hansen next.